This is the Dairy Download, brought to you by Blumling & Associates and the International Dairy Foods Association, where we offer extra sharp market and policy insights on dairy. I'm your host, Bill Plourd.
And I'm your co-host, Kathleen Wolfley.
Today's episode is about dairy and agricultural trade. We've seen a lot of change in trade policy and relationships the past 4 years. And now, with a different administration coming to town, we could see things take another turn in the months ahead. We're joined today by two women who have been in the mix every day. One works for a major U.S. cheese and dairy ingredients company with worldwide customers. The other holds the title of ambassador after a stint as a lead ag trade negotiator in the Obama administration. We'll get to them in a few minutes. But first, Kathleen, where are we now?
Thanks, Phil, and thanks to this episode's sponsor, Global Dairy Trade. COVID-19's unprecedented trade disruption has highlighted the essential role global dairy trade plays in providing price transparency for the export of core dairy ingredients. Learn more at www.globaldairytrade.info. We're talking on a Tuesday, a couple days before Thanksgiving, and block cheddar landed at $1.68, down 9 cents on the week. Barrels closed at $1.40, unchanged. Butter is all the way down to $1.31, down a nickel. And the non-fat dry milk market landed at $1.09, which is basically unchanged on the week. So, Phil, what do you think is the most important thing in the markets right now?
I think it's milk production momentum. Last week, we got the milk production report that showed October output up by 2.3% year over year, another big number. And cow numbers up 43,000 head. So we have a lot of milk in the system and coming at us, you know, with demand softening a little bit, which we'll talk about. I think that milk production momentum is a big deal. And even more importantly, wondering whether or not co-ops and handlers are going to dial up their efforts to limit milk production in one way or another in the weeks and months ahead. What about you?
So I don't need a 25-pound turkey as I had initially planned, which is a good thing since it doesn't fit in my oven. New restrictions on how many people you can have over to your household, what restaurants can do in terms of in-restaurant dining, all those new restrictions are having an impact on the market and will continue to have an impact on the marketplace. Jury's still out on how it's going to influence the dairy markets, but it will certainly be a different holiday season compared to normal. Phil, what is your stat of the week?
Well, going back to that thought of restrictions, my stat of the week is minus 37%. And that is average daily restaurant revenue in the U.S. according to Rally for Restaurants for the week ending November 15th. And that's a little worse than where we were in August and September when things were running down minus 25%. So we definitely have seen a retreat in restaurant sales the past few weeks. What about you?
People are still enhancing their living spaces for sure. Lumber prices are up to $630 per thousand board foot, which is down from $1,000 at the peak through midsummer, but still up from $400 per thousand board foot in November of 2019.
All right. Well, it's fearless prediction time. I'm going to stick with the butter market. And looking at the cold storage report that came out yesterday, I'm going to predict that butter stocks at year end are going to be over 250 million pounds. Now, average progress from here would leave us at 254. I'm going to take the over. And I think we're going to see butter stocks at the highest level on December 31st since 1992. So we're taking the over on 250 million pounds. What about you, Kathleen?
My fearless prediction is Jeff Bezos will see his net worth rise over the next week.
Well, that is really stepping out on a limb there, Kathleen.
I was
going
really
back to safe territory,
last time.
I see. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Well, Phil, let's get to our first guest, Brooke Markley.
It's a pleasure today to have Brooke Markley on the line. Brooke is Senior Manager of Trade Compliance and Policy at Leprino Foods. She's been with Leprino since 2014 in various roles. Previously, she served as an economist and agricultural attaché with USDA. Brooke, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here today.
So, if I'm not mistaken, you spent part of your time with USDA working in South America. How long were you there? Where did you live? And what was the biggest thing you learned during that time?
Well, this is true. I lived in Buenos Aires, Argentina for about 4 years, 2010 to 2014. I learned to love red wine and Malbecs, and I ate so much steak, more steak than I've ever eaten in my life. But it was a wonderful experience. And if you've ever had a chance to travel to Argentina, I would recommend you do it.
Well, Brooke, with U.S. cheese prices all over the board this year, how has the dynamic between domestic and global pricing impacted export demand?
It's been a really crazy year. Domestically, we saw a lot of ups and downs. And I think the theme, both domestically and internationally, we're seeing a lot of impacts from COVID, especially looking back into Q1. During March and April, we saw a lot of disruption. But if you think of the big picture, everybody has to eat. So COVID or no COVID, we're figuring out the way. Domestically, back in the early Q1, we saw a bunch of shutdowns and restaurants and gyms that had shuttered temporarily. So we saw a big drop in different demand for cheese and whey protein products. And then you saw that panic buying and consumers that were pantry loading supplies and like toilet paper and hand sanitizer, but that even extended into infant formula. You know, we saw these things happening internationally as well when China and other countries in Asia that are big lactose purchasers of U.S. lactose, they started to panic buy as well, thinking the U.S. would close their borders. So that was short-lived, and we sure hope that that's not the theme over the long term. We've been starting to see some rebalancing, but it has been extremely volatile.
And from a cheese price perspective, we touched roughly a dollar and $3 at the top on blocks. Has that impacted demand dynamics around cheese?
Yeah, of course it has. But you know, I go back to just saying that without COVID, with or without COVID, you know, domestically, we're still seeing people buying cheese. You know, grocery stores are trying to keep cheese on the shelves. Food service and restaurants are trying to adjust to these reduced capacity and figuring out how to do carry out and delivery. And I don't know about you, but I sure have ordered a lot of pizza delivery in the last 8 months compared to the last 5 years in my life. Internationally as well, certainly cheese prices have impacted demand, but I still put a lot of it to COVID. If you even take it a step further, some of the tariff and non-tariff barriers have been even more challenging than COVID and the international market.
How's that?
Well, we've had trade wars and retaliatory tariffs with China. We still see that. Those are still in place. You know, we had retaliatory tariffs with Mexico, which is one of our biggest partners and our closest neighbor. We've struggled with non-tariff barriers with Mexico and other important markets like India. Canada, on the other hand, their cheese market is very protected, and it's really hard to do business in Canada with cheese. You know, the tariff on their out of quota cheese is 245.5%. It's a lot. Getting quota is also difficult. You know, in 2017, the United States pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And if you look at what happened after that, all of the remaining 11 countries went ahead and moved forward with a different Trans-Pacific Partnership. And now New Zealand and Australia have increased access in Mexico. So those have been some other things that have been really on the forefront impacting U.S. exports in terms of dairy for the past few years.
What about more mechanical things like logistics? Has COVID really upset the apple cart in terms of actually moving product physically from here to somewhere else in the world? Mm-hmm. How has that played a role in the dynamic?
It changes from market to market. You know, we've seen some additional import requirements, not specifically related to logistics, but China is requiring documents that attest that cheese does not have COVID on it. And we all know that COVID is not transmitted through food. There's increased inspections in certain markets. We've seen customs clearance and different ports and warehouses just slower. On the flip side of it, you know, there's a lot of countries that are trying to work together to make sure that everybody does get food, which is an essential good. And I've seen exceptions for original documents and original signatures. They know everybody's working from home and they're in different workplaces. So they're saying, yeah, go ahead and send us scanned documents. We'll accept that in the meantime. So it has been disruptive, but everybody's kind of figuring out the way to make it work.
And then how does that all impact planning?
Yeah, for demand planning, you know, the theme has just been a lot of volatility and unpredictability. And I always think about, you know, what was it like for COVID, and what were the trends that we were seeing before COVID? What was the demand for dairy products worldwide before COVID? And it's for all agriculture products, you know, the countries are adapting to a more Western diet. Population is growing. There's more disposable income. Demand for protein is increasing around the world. And so, you know, we've always looked to the international market as a key for the future for the U.S. dairy industry. So I'm still putting that in as that's going to be the trend in the very long term, despite these shorter term disruptions.
From a policy perspective, the last 3 or 4 years has certainly been different than what preceded it. How do you see things evolving from here with the prospects for a new administration? What do you see moving the needle in terms of trade policy? How fast?
From a trade policy perspective, you know, I really am expecting there's going to be more predictability and stability related to trade. If you think about China, I mentioned that we, you know, everybody is aware of these retaliatory tariffs in place on U.S. cheese. And I would just hope that there is, addressing the underlying issues to the relationship with China, that there's a more constructive way to deal with it, and that this trade war could be de-escalated and eventually removing those retaliatory tariffs, because they've really significantly set back U.S. exporters in a market where we're already at a disadvantage. There's a few other countries that we compete with worldwide in dairy, and a couple of those are Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, they're located a lot closer to China than we are. They have free trade agreements with China and all of the Southeast Asian countries. And just an example, in China, U.S. cheese is charged an import tariff of either 12% or 8%, depending on the classification. And New Zealand cheese is charged 0%. Australian cheese is charged 4.8%, and that's going to drop to 0% in 2024. So even before the retaliatory tariffs were in place, we are at a disadvantage with those tariffs in China. And China, if it could be unlocked and we could get those leveled out, the most populous country in the world, that could unlock some real potential for the whole of the U.S. dairy industry.
We really appreciate your time today, Brooke. This has been a great discussion, really intriguing perspective.
Yes, thanks for being on the Dairy Download.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Let's shift gears and get the Washington perspective from Ambassador Darcy Vetter.
It's a privilege to have Ambassador Darcy Vetter with us today. She earned ambassador status in her role as Chief Agricultural Negotiator in the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative from 2014 to 2017. She was also Deputy Undersecretary for Farm and Foreign Agricultural Services under President Obama. And today, Ambassador Vetter is the Global Lead of Public Affairs and Vice Chair of Agriculture and Food at Edelman. Ambassador Vetter, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Thanks so much, Phil. It's a pleasure to be here.
So the first question is, as a professional negotiator, are you able to get things that you want done at home with your spouse and children? Do you have an edge as a professional negotiator in your household affairs?
Unfortunately, I think I've maybe raised two very small and good negotiators. So I get out negotiated at home by the 9 and 11 year olds frequently. So I'm unfortunately married to another trade negotiator. So, you know, it's it's all negotiation all the time in our house.
So more seriously, when negotiating trade deals, what's really happening in the room? What's the trickiest part in a trade negotiation session?
You know, negotiations have ebbs and flows and an interesting life cycle to them. And the first part of any negotiation, I mean, it's kind of like dating. You have to get to know one another. And so, you know, normally you start a negotiation and you come with the list of things that you want, your demands, what's important to you. And both sides sort of start with these statements and these opening positions. But if all you did was restate that over and over, you don't find those spaces where, you might be able to compromise. And it takes a series of meetings, with your negotiator on the other side of the table to sometimes figure out not what they want, but why they want it. And when you start to understand that the kind of needs behind the request, then sometimes you can get away from those first positions and really start talking about combinations of things that would make both of you walk away happier. And then, you know, it can be frustrating. It can be tense. But the one thing you have that if you lose it, the negotiation will go south really quickly is the strength of your word. And so when you offer something, you need to be able to back that up and continue to offer it.
What did you learn growing up on a farm in Nebraska that has now informed your work over the past many years?
One is having that firsthand experience and thinking about constraints that farmers face. I think sometimes when we negotiate around terms of trade and we think about time to implement these deals, you can forget that farmers don't have the same flexibility that other industries have. Like, there's adjustment time that's needed for any industry to adapt to new changes in trade. But, you know, if you have a crop in the ground, you can't decide you want to produce soybeans if you already planted corn, right? There are clear cycles of how farms work. But more broadly, I think it's just preparation. You know, like we're heading toward Thanksgiving and winter, and so maybe crops aren't in the ground, but now is the time when you mend the fence and you make sure all the machinery is ready to go for the spring, and you think about, you know, your marketing plan, and you clean out the shop, and you do all that stuff that gets you ready for spring. And there's just a lot of that before you ever get to the negotiating table, really analyzing what you're selling now, what you think you could sell later, who are your competitors. All that preparation is critically important, just like it is on the farm.
So really, when you're negotiating, you're thinking about the long game, not necessarily what sounds good today or what makes sense today.
That's right. I negotiated the ag package of the TPP. And what I thought was so interesting about that alliance of Asian countries was you had high value markets like Japan, which were ready to buy really high quality cuts of beef and high quality wine. And you had markets like Malaysia and Vietnam that might be more interested today in buying things like milk powder or bulk commodities, but as their incomes rose, we could get in on the ground floor to sell those same high quality products too. And in many ways, what you're trying to do is kind of get maybe some quick wins, but what you want is for U.S. agriculture to be their customer of choice over time. So maybe it makes sense for some products that we're already pretty strong in to get a quick tariff cut and really give us the advantage into that market and take more share. But there might be other products that the market is small today, but it might be big tomorrow. So you can take your time in getting there. And you have to work really closely with industry because they know what they're selling, right? And they are looking at the potential for that market. And while government has some good information, you know, our exporters really have on the ground experience navigating those trade barriers into those markets.
In a trade negotiation, when dairy comes up as a topic, do people like want to flee from the room because it's famously complicated? Or, you know, what's your experience been with dairy negotiations specifically?
Well, I think I wanted to flee from the room a couple of times, but I didn't really have that option. Dairy is, of course, very complicated. You know, and I think in the U.S., we have real export interests. We're the largest, you know, single country exporter of cheese, for example. But we're also sensitive to imports from other countries. In general, I think the dairy industry is quite strong and capable of competing in that global arena. And I see real potential for dairy exports, particularly in the Asian region where diets and income are changing. But, you know, making sure that we are competitively able to take advantage of that is really something to watch in the next few years.
Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about what's happening in Washington. We've had an election. There's a new administration coming online. What do you anticipate for a Biden administration's trade agenda?
President-elect Biden is inheriting a really complicated global environment. And particularly so, I think, on our trade relationships. And, you know, frankly, U.S. attitudes toward trade, our trade relationships, our thought about the role of trade in the economy has been changed by Trump's presidency. And so this is not just flip a switch and go back to the Obama-Biden years. You know, there's going to need to be a period of reflection and resetting. I think we have relationships to repair with some of our key trading partners, including, you know, Canada and Mexico. We have a rocky relationship right now with Europe that, you know, and those are countries that we will need to work closely with to be able to better address the relationship that has taken sort of center stage the past 4 years. And that is our trade relationship with China. But, you know, the Biden campaign has really said they want to look at stabilizing the domestic economy first, particularly as we deal with COVID-19 and the challenges from the coronavirus, with a strong look at the manufacturing sector and how manufacturing competes well with other economies, including, of course, China, where we've seen really massive subsidization of their sectors that has made it difficult for other countries to compete. I think the challenge and where I see some of a bright spot is that unlike the Trump administration, which essentially said, agriculture, you just need to be patient. It's time for us to do a reset with China. We need to push China. And we realize that that might be painful for you in agriculture. What I've seen from the Biden administration is we need to learn how to walk and chew gum at the same time. You can be tough on China without necessarily doing it in a way that puts agricultural exports in harm's way. But we also need to understand that there are sectors of our economy that are export competitive. And so we also need an agenda to be able to make sure that they are thriving as we think about what's happening on the manufacturing side as well.
So thinking about China, what does success look like? I mean, from an ag perspective.
You know, I'm not sure that there is an ag, long-term ag success is that separate from some of the things that we are seeking for other sectors of the economy. And that is a more transparent trading environment with China, an environment that is open for foreign investment and, you know, true partnership in the development of their agriculture sector, an environment where the United States can be selling and engaging in building up agricultural services. Of course, in the meantime, they're a really important export market for lots of different U.S. agricultural products, and we need certainty and consistency about what rules and tariffs are going to be applied. And we need a better working relationship to figure it out when we have trade challenges and where barriers arise.
Stepping away from China, do you see the U.S. going back to the table on multilateral agreements?
I think it's imperative that we engage on a regional basis. And I think, you know, just this weekend, so Sunday, the RCEP countries, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, again, that Asian trade deal with China at the hub and, you know, providing the real momentum and the central force behind it. You know, for a long time, it was unclear whether that agreement was going to go across the finish line. And of course, they've signed that deal on Sunday and now we'll be starting toward implementation. The TPP countries went ahead without us and signed and implemented what they now call the CPTPP. So there are broad alliances throughout the most dynamic region of the world in terms of agricultural markets and economies that the United States just isn't part of. And I think it's a fantasy to think that we could bilaterally go to each one of those countries and negotiate a trade deal, knowing that the process we have to follow in the United States, even for individual countries, is a multi-year and politically difficult process. If we want to ever be back on the same competitive footing with our key competitors in the ag markets globally, we can't pick them off one by one.
Well, I'm guessing that trade has not been dull the past few years, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be dull the next few years going forward. Darcy, we really appreciate your time today, and thank you for being part of the Dairy Download.
Thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
That's a wrap for today's show. As always, we want to thank our production team, Matt Herrick, Michael Gooden, and Andrew Jerome at IDFA. and Corey Romero over here at Blimlingen Associates. If you're interested in what Kathleen and I do for our day jobs, check us out at www.dairy.com.
And thank you to our sponsor, Global Dairy Trade. COVID-19's unprecedented trade disruption has highlighted the essential role global dairy trade plays in providing price transparency for the export of core dairy ingredients. Learn more at www.globaldairytrade.info. Thanks for listening to the Dairy Download. Until next time, stay sharp.